Hey, everybody. Oh, it's so good to be back. I love this place. I love you guys. And I love Bill Rotella, and I'm so happy that he sang Lean On Me as our opening song, because one of the guiding principles in my life, and I think in a lot of our lives, is the law of relationship. And the law of relationship says that we're all connected and we're here to help each other learn and grow. So, if we're all connected, does that mean that we're all the same? Well, yes and no. I mean, yes, we're all one, right? But at the same time, we're each very individualized expressions of God, of that oneness. And there's a Sanskrit word called purnatva, and that means self-realization. And we can spend pretty much our whole lives working on this, of getting to know, who am I, right? Of trying to answer that question, who am I? And we can do this by looking at what are our unique strengths. What is our inherent nature? And in Sanskrit, our inherent nature is called svabhava. So Ernest Holmes says about individuality, and this is, you know, about coming to terms with self-realization. Ernest Holmes says, individuality means real individualized being and real personified self-choice. We could not imagine an individuality without self-choice, but what would be the use of self-choice unless the ability to choose were backed with the power to externalize that choice? It would remain simply an idle dream, never coming into self-expression. A little thought will make it clear that if man is created to express freedom, he must be left to discover himself. So I think this is one of our big goals in life, is to discover ourselves, to discover who we are, to discover our svabhava. And we all come into this life with a past, with a family, you know, with issues, baggage, so to speak, right? But we can get past that. We can learn who we are. We can discover the truth about our own divinity and everything, and really learn about life. So in Indian philosophy, there's one God that I think expresses his true nature very well, and we can learn from him so much, and that's Shiva. So I'm going to introduce you to Shiva. So if I click this, is it going to go? Up, so I'm going backwards? Wait. Okay. There we go. There's Shiva.
Hi, Shiva.
Hi, Shiva. Now, Shiva, in Hindu philosophy, there are three, like, main gods. There's Brahma, who's the god of creation. And then there's Vishnu, who's the god of, like, maintenance and maintaining everything. And then there's Shiva, who's the god of destruction. But he's not just the god of destruction. He's the god of destruction, and he's the god of recreation. And a lot of times we think, you know, he's kind of a dichotomy. How can he be the destructor and he's the recreator? And he's such an interesting, unusual individual that he teaches us so much just by being himself. So, you know, when you look at Shiva, you look at him and you go, okay, well, does he really look like a god? I mean, most of the Indian gods you see are dressed in a lot of finery and a lot of jewels, gold, and all this stuff. And here's Shiva, and he's just kind of like half naked, and he's covered in ash, and for jewelry he's wearing a snake, and you're thinking, what is going on with that guy? I mean, he's got his hair's all matted and everything, and he's just who he is. But each of these things are a choice that he made about himself. It's how he externalized his self-choice, just like Ernest Holmes was talking about. So So we can learn from each of these little things. For example, his matted hair. This represents the wind. He's also known as the Lord of Vayu. Vayu is wind. And wind is a subtle expression of our breath, which gives us life. So by having his matted hair, he's reminding us that everything is living. Everything is flowing through us, through our breath. We're all connected in that way. And then up in his hair, I don't know if you can see, but up through the top of his head, there's water spilling out. And the water spilling out is actually the Ganges River. And there's an old story about how Shiva is like the purifier. So he purifies the water, which is also life-giving to us. And it comes through his head, and he provides for everyone. So this is the Ganges River coming down. So that's where that came from. And then you'll notice he's kind of a bluish in his skin, is kind of bluish. This comes from two things. The first reason is because when the universe was created, as the story goes, there was this big ocean of milk and gesundheit. And the gods are all stirring the milk, and it wasn't churning enough. So they said, okay, we're going to use a snake to churn the milk. And, of course, as they're churning with the snake's getting a little bit seasick and everything, and he throws up his poison in the milk of the universe. And everyone was, oh no, what do we do? What do we do? Shiva says, I'll take care of it, because Shiva knows he's fearless. He can overcome anything. He can purify anything. So Shiva sucks out all the poison out of the milk of the ocean, and it turned his throat blue. So that's how he got his blue throat. But then how the rest of his body looks kind of ashy and everything is because the ash of in India, when somebody dies, they're cremated. And it's like, you know, in the Bible it says ashes to ashes, dust to dust. We go back to being ashes and dust. And many people look at those ashes as, oh, that we don't want to touch that. That represents death to us and finality, and we don't want that. But Shiva has the opposite side of you. He says, that's beautiful. It's without death, there's no life. So I want to embrace that. I not only want to embrace it, I want to put it all over my skin. So he just bathes in it, and he walks around in it. And his wife all the time is on his case saying, Shiva, take a bath. What are you doing? You know, are you nuts or whatever? He's like, no, this is great. I love it. I'm in it. You know, there's nothing to fear. He doesn't even fear snakes. He wears the snakes as a necklace around his neck. And the three, it's supposed to wrap around three times. It represents past, present, and future, meaning the timelessness of everything. We're constantly in the past, present, and future. You know, in the present moment, at any given time, we could be thinking of the past or planning for the future. In spirit, there is no such thing as time. So it's all happening at once. And you'll notice that the snake is looking over his right shoulder. And the right side is because Shiva's so into law, like Ernest Holmes was into law, and what's right and what's just and what's fair. And he says, you know, many people are afraid of snakes. They're going to bite you. They're going to poison you. And he says, no, everything in this life has a purpose. Everything is here to serve us. Because of the snakes, we have the fields. The snakes kill the vermins that destroy the fields. So the snake is the farmer's best friend. So the snakes are my friend. So he doesn't shun them, and he doesn't put them away in a cage. He's going to wear it as a necklace. Say, I'm Shiva. I can wear what I want, and I'm going to wear this snake necklace. The other necklaces that he's wearing are made out of the Rudraksha beads. And these malas, and I'm sure you've seen malas before, they're like rosaries. They're like prayer beads. There's 108 beads in them. And you hold them one by one, and they count your mantras. So 108 is a very spiritual number. The one represents the connection of us with the universe. The O is like the oneness of all of us together. And the eight sideways is infinity, no time, no space. So 108, and it's also the nine planets times the 12 astrological signs. There's a lot of significance in that. And the Rudraksha seeds themselves represent life, represent the seed of life, the pure potentiality of life, that anything is possible. From this tiny little seed, this big Rudraksha tree grows. So it's also, they're very spiritual in India. They're known as Krishna's tears, those little Rudraksha seeds, and they're very holy. So he's got all of that going on. Then you'll notice he's got a trident. And this is because he's, you know, his weapon, he's the destroyer, right? But what is he destroying? He's destroying negativity. He's destroying ego. He's destroying ignorance, all that kind of stuff. But the trident itself, even, that it has three points is significant because it represents the three gods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. It represents past, present, future. It represents all kinds of, knowledge. Okay, will, action, and knowledge. Those three things. It represents sattva, raja, and tamas, which is reminding us to take the middle path, to not be too active, to not be too still, but to take that middle path because that's where our best knowledge is going to come. That's where our most energy is going to come, where it's going to flow. So the trident has all those different analogies. Then you'll notice he's got a drum over here, and it's kind of a drum that's, it's shaped kind of like a V in the middle and tied with a scarf around his trident. The drum is two-sided, so it plays on both sides, and it represents the manifest and the unmanifest. And the sound that the drum plays is the om, and here's the om. The sound om is the sound that the universe makes, and it reminds us to tune in to the sounds of the universe, because that's where all the wisdom is. Okay? So then we see here, he's got two eyes, but he's also got his third eye in the middle. And of all the Hindu gods, he's the only one that has the third eye in the middle. Some of them might have a dot, like representing a bindi dot, representing the third eye, but he has the actual eye in the middle of his head. So how did this happen, that he just grew this third eye? Well, the story goes that his right eye is the sun and his left eye is the moon. So this provides all the light and heat that we need. And one day he and his wife were playing around. They have their relationship, by the way, Shiva and Parvati, is very playful. And we can learn a lot from their relationship as well. So they were playing around and she was doing kind of a, you know, sneaking up behind him, and she put her hands over his eyes, guess who, kind of thing. And when she put her hands over his eyes, the whole universe went dark. Because he's the sun and the moon right here. The whole universe went dark. And at that point, he grew his third eye. And the third eye represents fire, which is our other source of light and heat, right? And it represents that we should be ever watchful, ever mindful, and that Shiva is watching over us. He's protecting us all the time. So let's see. He's sitting on a tiger. A tiger represents lust and passion and things like that. But the fact that he's sitting on it means that he has conquered that, that he is stronger than that, than his lust or his passions. And he's got this water bowl here. And the water bowl is, they used to make water bowls out of carved out gourds or pumpkins. And that represents to us that we need to take away our ego, scoop out our negativity and all that, all the aspects of our lives that don't serve us so that we can fill it up with nectar. And when you fill up the gourd with water, it kind of turns into nectar because the sweetness of the pumpkin is still there, right? It's everything is so symbolic. It's like incredible the way they have drawn these pictures and they tell these stories. Also, you'll notice that Shiva kind of looks feminine, doesn't he? I mean, I have this picture hanging in my office, and I have a little sister from Big Brother's Little Sisters who's 12 years old, and she's like, "Who's that?" And I said, "That's Shiva. He's the god of destruction." And she's like, "That's a guy?" And I said, "Yeah, that's a guy. He looks really pretty." And I'm like, "Yeah, he does look really pretty. It's because he understands that there's a yin and a yang, a Shiva and a Shakti, a male and a female, and he's not worried that he's a man. He can look beautiful, you know. He wears earrings like a woman, and he's got long hair like a woman. And in Hindu philosophy, it says we're really all the same from the waist up. And you'll notice in a lot of the drawings, you'll see they're all wearing a belt because gods or goddesses, all from the waist up, we're the same. And then he's got, right here, you'll see the Himalayas in the background. And that represents that Shiva, like in Indian philosophy, you spend the first 20 years of your life as a student. And then at that point, after you finish studying, you make a decision. Are you going to be a householder or are you going to be an ascetic, right? So if you're a householder, you get married, you have children, you get a job, you know, you take care of business. If you're going to be an ascetic, then you're celibate and you go live in the mountains and you study God and you devote your life to God the whole rest of your life. So if you decide that you're going to be a householder, then you're going to be a householder for about 20 years of your life, and you're building your career and your family and you're taking care of business. And then when you start at about 40-ish, you start being a grandpa or a grandma, and you start being a coach to younger people, teaching them your trade or whatever so that people are there to carry it on for you. And then in the latter part of your life, you become an ascetic. So it's like you worked all this hard and then you earn the right to go on to the mountains and retire and whatever you want to do to just study and be by yourself. But Shiva, he got to age 20 and he says, well, why can't I be both? So he decided he wasn't going to choose if he's going to be a householder or an ascetic. He was both. So he had a family. In fact, he's Ganesha's dad. If you guys heard, you know, about Ganesh, he's the god who has the elephant head and the body of a human. He's Ganesha's dad. And he never really wanted to have children. He just thought he and Parvati would just live a nice life, the two of them. But Parvati really wanted kids. And so she manifested Ganesh on her own. But he grew to love him, and that he was a good dad, and that they had two sons together. But every once in a while, when life could get too crazy, he'd go off and meditate. So he'd go into the mountains as if he were an ascetic to kind of chill, you know, to kind of be like, okay, had enough of being a dad today. I need to get my brain back and get cool. So we can all relate to that, right? If you have kids, I can relate to that totally. So let's see. I think that's about it. I was going to show you some other pictures of him. His eyes are half closed. They're not like wide open. They're half closed. And that's representing the cycle of life. So when the eyes are open, he's creating. And when the eyes are closed, he's destroying. So it's all a cycle of life. And you can't have one without the other. So that's what he's teaching us. Oh, and you'll notice he has, in this picture, you can't see it, but I have another picture of him. You can see the moon in his hair. He's like, you know, he's the master of the universe. He's like, oh, I like the moon. I'm going to put the moon in my hair. I'm just going to wear it today. And the moon represents also those cycles of life, how everything is constantly changing. And we can't get attached to any one thing in particular because it's all ephemeral. The life changes. Everything changes all the time. But what stays the same? Our oneness, our truth, our who we are the lessons that we learn, wisdom and everything. That's what we need to hold on to. Also, this is his vehicle, the bull. See, everybody, all the different gods, they have different vehicles that they choose, right? They didn't have cars in those days. So in Indian mythology, Hindu mythology, they had a little vehicle. So Ganesh had a rat that he rode around on, and Ganesh's brother had a peacock that he rode around on, and Parvati actually had a tiger or a lion that you'll see her with. But Shiva chose the bull. And the bull represents the virility and the strength, but it also represents ignorance. And the fact that he rides around, it means he's conquered ignorance. And it also, the bull is called Vrisha in Sanskrit. And Vrisha means righteousness. So it means righteousness comes with him wherever he goes. It partners with him wherever he goes. So kind of interesting character, don't you think? Yeah. And he made all these choices, which really explained who he was. He understood who he was. And in his younger life, there are stories about him getting angry and destroying everything, you know, and then he'd regret it. He'd be like, oh, okay, I have to use my powers for good. So he learned to recreate and used to learn to think again. And the older he got, the wiser he got. This is a picture of Shiva and Parvati. And this just shows the dual nature of him, how he really considered Parvati his better half. And so literally, this is like his better half. And you'll see how she's decked out in finery, and here's the lion that she rides around on, and there he is with his ashes, you know? Just people thought they must have thought they were quite an unusual couple, but she loved him totally. They had a wonderful relationship. In fact, a lot of times when you look at pictures of the gods and goddesses, the couples, the male is drawn so much larger than the woman, even like Vishnu and Lakshmi. Vishnu's really big, and then Lakshmi, who's the goddess of wealth and abundance, is this tiny little thing compared to him. But always Parvati and Shiva are equals. He saw her as his equal, definitely. And then this is Dancing Shiva. You may have seen these statues or these necklaces around. And this is him just enjoying life and having a celebration. But you'll notice there's a little like guy under here that he's jumping on. That little guy represents ignorance and evil and negativity that he's stomping out, that he's destroying. That's what he's destroying all the time. And then this is the family portraits. So there's Shiva and Parvati, the mom. And there's Ganesh, the older son, who has the body of a man and the head of an elephant. So the way that happened is because Shiva was all the time off doing his stuff with the guys and his ganas. The ganas, even talk about a motley crew, you know, like most gods and goddesses had this entourage of beautiful people just following them all over the place. And Shiva didn't want anything to do with that. He had all the misfits and the outcasts, and they were his buddies. And he looked at them because we're all one. We're all the same. He didn't see anything bad about them at all. It's like, come on, guys, you're with me, you know? And so they were like, you're great, because he accepts us and loves us as we are. And that's what he was trying to say, is be who you are, you know, be an individual. So he was off with his buddies, and Parvati's thinking, oh, this is my opportunity. Now I'm going to have a kid when he's not around. So she's a goddess, so she can manifest anything. So she was taking a bath, and then she took some of the dirty water from her bath, and she formed it, and she turned it into a little boy. They can do these in do mythology. They can, don't try this at home, but it worked for her, right? So the little boy, and in Hindu mythology, of course, there's no space or time. So of course, 10 years goes by. He's like a 10-year-old little boy, and he adores his mother. And he protected her. So she was taking a bath again, and she said, just stand outside the door to make sure nobody comes in. He says, fine, that's no problem at all. So he's guarding the door, and this is when Shiva comes back. And the kid doesn't know Shiva. He's never seen him before. So he's protecting his mother and saying, you can't go in there. And Shiva's at first, he's like annoyed. Come on, you know, what? You're a kid. I'm going to go in there. That's my, nope, you're not going in there. Very firm. Finally, Shiva's anger got the best of him, and he took his sword and chopped off his head. Just then, Parvati got out of the tub, and she's like, what did you do? That's my son. You killed my son. And she was distraught, and he goes, I didn't know that was your son. There was no kid when I left here. What is going on? And she said, you bring him back. You are the mighty Shiva. You bring him back. And he said, okay. So he did the best thing he could, and he saw a baby elephant on the road, took the elephant's head, put it on the kid's head, and now this is how Ganesh got his elephant head. Shiva says, you're alive, and he came alive. So here's Ganesh, and you can see his little rat here, which is his vehicle, and here's his brother, Kartik. Imagine growing up in the family where you're the kid with the elephant head, and here's your beautiful little brother, gorgeous, smart, talented, athletic, and here's Ganesh, like, okay, what have I got going on here? Ganesh was so wise. He always got the best of his little brother. Whenever they had competitions or anything, everybody thought, oh, Kartik is so smart and so wise and so handsome, but Ganesh would always best him. And one time they both got engaged, and they said to their parents, we want to get married, but on the same day. And they said, you can't get married on the same day. Okay, we'll have a competition, and we'll decide who's going to get married when, who gets this particular day, and who's going to have to wait. So we're going to have a competition, and it's going to be a race. You have to race around the world 3 times, and whoever wins the race gets the day to get married. So Kartik is like, I got this. Takes off on his peacock. Peacocks can fly, right? He's like, got a big lead on Ganesh. Ganesh is like, what? I've got a rat and I've got this pudgy little elephant, you know, guy body. What am I gonna do? And then he thought about it and he goes, oh, okay, mom and dad, come here. Sat him down. And he walked around them 3 times. And they're like, Ganesh, what are you doing? He said, you said to go around the world 3 times. Well, you are the world to me. And they're like, oh, good son. Clever, see? Clever. They said, you got it. So they had the wedding, and it was all over and done by the time Kartik got back. And he's like, I won, right? And he's like, nah, you lost. It's okay. So Ganesh totally knew who he was. He had his swabhava totally down. So, oops, did I go the wrong way again? Okay, I want to go back to that one. So there's our Shiva. So what can we learn from Shiva? Shiva teaches us that in any challenging situation, what can we remember? When we're challenged, what can we remember? What can we learn from Shiva? Number one, push away negativity. Always remember intelligence over ignorance. Keep that in mind. We have all aspects of us, but we have our unique qualities, and we can think. We have the power of intelligence that Ernest Holmes also tells us in The Science of Mind. Ernest Holmes says, each one of us is an outlet to God and an inlet to God. We can rely on each other. If there's something we don't know or can't figure out, we can lean on me. That's why we're all here. That's why we're all individuals, because we can't be everything all at the same time, but we can be the best we me. I can be. I may know stuff you don't know. You may know stuff I don't know. And we're here to help each other learn and grow. Number two is keep going. Don't be lazy. Just forge ahead. That's how Shiva was. He always kept going. He learned his lessons. He grew from whatever he learned. He became a better person the more he got to know himself. The third is let go of ego. See the truth with a capital T. See the truth. Always look for that. What is real? Differentiate what is real from what is not real. You know, I think this comes up a lot when we're looking at, you know, gossip and rumors and stuff like that. It's like, oh, we don't have time for that. What's real? Who am I? Get back to that, you know. And then the fourth lesson we learned from Shiva is to recognize our swabhava. Our likes, look at your likes, your dislikes. Look at your learning style. Look at your dosha. Ayurveda is all about teaching us who we are and understanding our strengths and our challenges and how to take care of ourselves, how to live an Ayurvedic lifestyle so that we can be the best person that we are, living our healthiest and happiest.